Palm and the DLF family of podcasts. That's Tommy B. I'm the SFD. This is the Super Flex Super Show. And here we go. Because, Tom, we have a ton of stuff all of a sudden that we need to talk about. We've got free agency just wrapped up. And I really wanted to talk about, like, where you can find recaps of free agency. You can find people's opinions on what free agency did for each individual player. There are people who are better at that than we are. What I do think, though, is just the way the dominoes kind of fall through the non-point scoring season is something worth addressing. The fact that these free agent moves, and we can talk about some of the free agent signings, some of the movement, what does it mean? Who got some value bumps? Who got some value drops? We can talk about all that stuff as well. But to me, the bigger issue is what free agency does to our projected strategies going into the rookie draft, going into the next step, I felt like it would be a good opportunity. We don't like talking rookies, but it's a good time to talk rookies because they're kind of affected by free agency too. So what do you think? Can we fit all of that into one episode?
Let's see, man. You and I have been talking for about 30 minutes and we've been griping and taking some pretty bold stances. So I'm excited for this one. And I do think it is time to talk about where the rookies fit in to the puzzle that is your dynasty roster right now. Rookies matter. We have a little bit more information. No, we don't know how they're going to do, but it's time now. Let's do it, John.
Yeah. So let's just go ahead and start with the free agents themselves.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think that we can talk a little bit about value, the movement of some player values a little bit. I think that there are kind of a lot of different ways to approach that, in fact. So I guess the big thing that I'm curious is, what are some of the takeaways for you in terms of, how you would approach a startup, how you would approach an orphan, how did anything change for you based on some rosters that you already have and how you are going to attack the rest of the non-point scoring season? Just kind of what are some action items that came out of free agency for you?
I think where I'd like to start is the LA Chargers. Mm-hmm. Justin Herbert has never been more accessible than he is right now. And he has done things in his career that even Patrick Mahomes hasn't. He's put up insane stats with pretty good, not great talent. And a lot of that talent went out the door, didn't it, John?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now is the time to buy, because when you invest in a 25, 26-year-old Justin Herbert, you're not necessarily just paying for this year. What you're saying is the profile is so dang enticing. And I've been able to get into a Justin Herbert for the 101 straight up this week. I think that's a slam dunk. I don't know how you couldn't do that type of trade right now. Have you seen that in your leagues?
I haven't seen a lot of it. I actually traded for a share of Justin Herbert myself.
What did the other it take?
Day. So I gave up. It was Trevor Lawrence, Tank Dell, and a 2026 second round pick, which 2026 is just not even on my radar at this point. So, yeah. And I got back Justin Herbert, and I also got Trey Lance thrown in. I really kind of added in the second on my end, the Lance on his end. Otherwise it was his offer. I just kind of added in those two pieces. And my thought is, so this is one of my few rosters. It's really interesting. Like, we kind of talk about this roster fairly often because it's such an anomaly for me. It's not a quarterback extreme roster. I drafted QBX, but it was a league where there were a bunch of people in it trying to block me from QBX. And so I ended up with some not great options. And it basically took tearing down my quarterback depth to get into some reasonable quarterbacks with long-term job security. So I, at one point I ended up with, I was down to Joe Burrow and Dak Prescott. Traded Joe Burrow when he went down with the injury because I was in the middle of contention. I got back Trevor Lawrence plus some stuff. It was a decent trade. It's one that I've regretted a little bit since then, but I mean, I got back some very usable players on top of Trevor Lawrence. And you know, process wise, to me, that's a pretty acceptable move. So I was down to Trevor Lawrence and Dak Prescott. Now I move Trevor Lawrence for Justin Herbert. I haven't been adding to my quarterback depth. I've just kind of been shuffling those two quarterbacks, and leaving an otherwise loaded roster, just kind of in this, a little bit of a house of cards at the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. And so the idea with Trey Lance being, this might be a buy low window for him, with him, first of all, Dak Prescott, there's a little bit of noise there, in terms of some potential legal issues. Don't know how much, I don't want to even speculate on what that's going to mean. But, you know, if I were to lose Dak Prescott, now I've got his immediate backup who I think has plenty of fantasy upside. The more likely scenario to me is that at some point Trey Lance finds a starting job somewhere else after a year behind Dak Prescott. We've got several teams that are looking. We've basically put it this way. We've got more teams in need of a starting quarterback than starting quarterbacks that are going to be available to them. So, you know, Trey Lance could be an option, could be a trade target for somebody like the Denver Broncos or the New York Giants. If they don't end up with one of the top four rookie quarterbacks, there's a good chance that they, I guess the Giants aren't likely to get anything from the Dallas Cowboys. But anyways, not to mention the fact that, if a quarterback were to get injured in training camp, preseason, or early in the season, they might trade for Trey Lance to be their starter for the rest of the season there as well. So there are kind of a lot of ways for that to happen. And then all of a sudden, you know, I've got a little bit more quarterback depth. So that was a big part of it. I do feel like I said, process wise, the trade of Burrow for Lawrence plus, and it was multiple starters. It included Kenneth Walker, maybe Pat Freiermuth, something like that. It was like in a heavy tight end premium. So it was like, you know, process wise, is Joe Burrow necessarily going to outscore Trevor Lawrence by that much? Probably not. Like, those guys can probably make up that difference. The problem here is I just went against that exact same process by trading Trevor Lawrence plus for Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
Even though I think that I upgraded at that quarterback position, I just don't believe that it's enough of an upgrade that to go from Justin Herbert to Trevor Lawrence. I don't think, or from Trevor Lawrence to Justin Herbert, I don't think that's enough of an upgrade to necessarily give up, you know, a starter and a second round pick. A starter at another position that I don't care as much about, but, you know, I hurt my depth a little bit at wide receiver. Sure. I've got one fewer future pick, and it'll be a fairly high leverage pick when the time comes. So all of that for probably a little bit of a scoring boost on a weekly basis, right, on average, where I also kind of think that Trevor Lawrence is ultimately going to outscore Justin Herbert from time to time.
I get that. And they're all totally valid points. Here's my thought. Do you care about having Adam Thielen on your team, John?
No, not really.
Not really. Tank Dell on a points per game basis scored less than 1 point more than Adam Thielen. I'm not saying Tank Dell doesn't matter. I'm saying that in the universe of fantasy, he's not greatly impacting your wins and losses. He's helping you hold serve, right? So this deal to me is the jump in robust profiles. Justin Herbert was QB 10, QB 2, QB 12, and last year QB 13 in his worst year. Like, that's a pretty sturdy profile. You know what you're going to get moving forward with Justin Herbert. And that's probably a QB 1. Like, I think the quarterback 1 overall is going to happen at some point in his career. He has that type of talent. He has the ability to run. He has a huge arm. He just needs touchdown variance to go his way. He needs enough pass catching weapons to support that. And I think that's entirely possible. And then you bought Trey Lance. The upside, the variance, the highs and the lows are certainly on that side of the trade, right? Like, you've bought sturdiness in Herbert, and then you've bought the upside of Trey Lance. If he eventually even does what, I don't know, late career Justin Fields did and has one half of a season, 8 games where he's the QB 7 overall, what do you think you could get for Trey Lance at that point, knowing where his career has been thus far?
Yeah, I mean, part of it, the uncertainty, the lack of a resume in some ways can work in his favor, you know? So I think it's probably, you know, to your point, I think it's probably a bigger return than, oh, I don't know, you know, like Sam Darnold at this point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a minute there, we thought Sam Darnold, you know, back to free agency, for a minute there, we thought Sam Darnold was going to be the starter for the Minnesota Vikings. Sure doesn't look like that's the case anymore, but, and, you know, he got a decent value bump, but it also comes with a resume that kind of indicates, you know, this is kind of a stopgap at best. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I do think, you know, I think with Trey Lance, there could be a pretty significant value boost when the time comes, because there's a possibility that he, you know, his next chance to start is kind of a long-term proposition.
There are so many bridge opportunities in the NFL that all it takes is one for him to take the job and just hold it. We've seen it before. We saw Matt Leinart really struggle to get on the field because an aged Kurt Warner held him off, right? There are plenty of those types of examples, if you play fantasy long enough, where you're very sure about the incoming highly touted rookie quarterback like Trey Lance. And all it takes is one veteran who knows a little bit more, who has seen NFL defenses on a practice field and can hold off that rookie for half a season for him to totally rehab his value.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of back to Herbert, I felt like getting Trey Lance thrown in was a pretty important piece of it. And, you know, there were kind of a lot of reasons that made it make sense to me. A move that otherwise, you know, kind of went against my overall strategy, my overall process. That tipped the scale, and that feels like, you know, to a lot of people, that's just Trey Lance is just kind of a throw in. To me, that's us. Yeah, that's me negotiating from something that deviates from my strategy back in within the confines of my strategy, just by adding in Trey Lance for the low cost of a second round pick that's 2 years down the road. So, you know, to that part certainly made sense. The tougher part is kind of Herbert versus Lawrence, and especially now, And I mean, these moves had been made when I made this trade. Mike Williams had been cut. Keenan Allen traded to Chicago. Now we know Mike Williams is with the New York Jets. They haven't done anything at wide receiver at this point. What they have done is brought in a head coach who just wants to run the ball almost exclusively. And so, you know, for kind of a lot of reasons, people are pretty nervous right at the moment about Justin Herbert without any weapons and with a run first, run heavy type of system. And, you know, so I was already kind of worried about, like I said, I don't know that Justin Herbert was ever going to be significantly better than Trevor Lawrence on a weekly basis. You know, not to a point where Tank Dell, and you know, you make a good point when it comes to Tank Dell's actual scoring. Part of the value with him also is that he's young. Yep. And so it kind of, I was kind of in a little bit of a situation, a wide receiver with him and Garrett Wilson, where I don't really have to address this position anytime soon. You know, I'm kind of set with those two guys. I still have DK Metcalf and Garrett Wilson, but I still the moment where I have to readdress the wide receiver position gets here a little bit sooner now that I don't have Tank Dell. So that's kind of the value that I lost. And I'm not totally sure about the value that I gained in getting Justin Herbert to replace Trevor Lawrence.
I think you gained points. The numbers would back you up that you gained a few points in your starting lineup. We should ask that question for the listeners. How many starters in this league?
Oh, good question. I want to say 11.
Mm-hmm. So pretty deep, right? Super flex, start 11, tight end premium, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. Heavy premium. Yeah, it's like 1.75, I think.
It makes the second matter a lot more. The deeper the roster gets, the higher the premiums on super flex and or tight ends. Like, that second round pick does matter. However, you've leaned into it a little bit, getting Trey Lance as well. But to focus on Justin Herbert, like, you're getting a couple more points per game in a standard format, in a traditional format. And so I don't mind that at all. I think that it's totally fine. Like, if I'm looking at the career path of Trevor Lawrence, he's a bit of a unicorn. He looks a lot like Alex Smith from a production standpoint, but he acts a lot like Carson Palmer. And so I'm a little confused as far as like, where do I project him to go? I don't think it's Alex Smith. Do you?
No, I don't think so. First of all, I think there's more rushing upside.
Mm-hmm. Which Alex Smith ran a lot in his career.
Yeah. Yeah. Trevor Lawrence feels like he's athletic enough that I think you could really run some designed runs if you wanted.
Yep.
I don't know how inclined they are to do that. I mean, that's not something that Doug Peterson has ever really shied away from, but we haven't seen a lot of it so far. But like I think that upside is there. I think that I hadn't really thought too much about the comp, but like everything I'm trying to say, you know, to argue against that, I'm just like, that's not totally true. Like, the pocket passing ability, the football IQ, like all of that stuff really kind of matches up quite a bit. So, there's the pedigree, you know, there's the fact that we've seen Trevor Lawrence coming since high school, where Alex Smith just kind of came out of nowhere to be the first overall pick. But man, like that expires at some point. It's got to. We talked about that last week. Like at some point we have to develop amnesia when it comes to the draft, and that includes the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
The thing this grants you, though, is I don't think you need to worry about amnesia, because having Justin Herbert, he is so much more Dan Marino than Trevor Lawrence probably ever will be. And there's a chance that they're going to be scoring exactly the same in fantasy football next year, 5 years down the line, however long you have these quarterbacks. But right now you have security. And so I really liked that. To move the conversation back to free agency, another elite profile we've sort of glanced at a little bit in this conversation is Justin Jefferson. I've found a lot of accessibility to him as well. Have you seen that in your leagues?
No. No, I mean, maybe I haven't been paying enough attention, but
I see a buy window, John. I paid T. Higgins, JSN, and I think the 202. I got Justin Jefferson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, one of the weird things that's happening right now is there are kind of a lot of rumors, and I don't know where this is actually. Well, I do know where this is coming from. Antonio Brown started this one. So, and he's kind of gotten a lot of stuff right lately. So we kind of have to wonder if this has some legs. But he's the one saying that the Vikings and Steelers are working on a trade for Justin Jefferson.
It feels so much like Dogecoin or those other like stupid investments where it's like, I don't trust these people. I don't know what the hell they're talking about, but it keeps working. So eventually you're like, I guess I'm on the train.
I know. Yeah, like Dogecoin on with CTE, in fact. Yeah. Like, how am I supposed to trust that except for the fact that he keeps getting it right? So, so yeah, we kind of have to be a little bit vigilant of that possibility, which I think would hurt Justin Jefferson. I not to a point where, like some people are saying, he would be the wide receiver two behind George Pickens. Like, get out of here with that. Like, yeah. That's by a lot. But now you're sending him from a system that's meant to be get the ball into the hands of your playmakers to a system, or at least a quarterback duo that believes that they're the playmakers that should have the ball in their hands at all times. Yeah. So like, you know, the passing volume goes way down. The quality of targets goes way down. So that would be pretty awful for Justin Jefferson. But the fact that right now people are just kind of are viewing Justin Jefferson as just not really having a quarterback, that tells me that it probably is a little bit of a buy window. Like, he would be just fine with Sam Darnold. Like, I don't think that quarterback matters enough that he would take a huge step back going from Kirk Cousins to Sam Darnold. I also don't think that's necessarily how this is going to play out. It sure doesn't look like it. Like, the Vikings have completely loaded up to make a big move. And whether that's for Drake May or JJ McCarthy, not sure which yet. But either way, like, it's not going to be Sam Darnold. But if it was, I think that, like, I think that Jefferson would be fine. I think Addison would be fine. And I think that the only one really affected would be Darnold himself. And it would be a positive bump for him.
Let's say the worst case scenario happens. Justin Jefferson is stuck with Sam Darnold for all of 2024. I would imagine the following year, there would be a Jared Goff QB level trade over to the Vikings to stabilize the ship. Even if it's horrible, what are you looking at? 1,200 yards for Justin Jefferson and then a return to his former glory moving forward? He's like 26 years old. Mm-hmm. If there is a buy window in your league, what types of deals would you be looking for in order to acquire Justin Jefferson?
Man, I wonder if you could get Justin Jefferson plus for CeeDee Lamb right now.
I bet you could.
That's someone that we kind of pick on a lot. That's a pretty easy one. Like Tyreek Hill, and add a little bit to Tyreek Hill for Justin Jefferson. You know, like a move like that.
You want to dig in the wide receiver ranks in order to move into Jefferson, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I kind of think you could probably get Jefferson for 102 at this point, rookie 102. And to me, he should, he, as much as I think, as much as Caleb Williams is a difference maker, it's such a scarce position, I still think Justin Jefferson should be worth 101 minimum. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think you should have to consider Caleb Williams for Justin Jefferson straight up. But the fact that someone would probably give you Justin Jefferson for 102 because they're feeling, this is something that I hope that we have time to get to as well. But the, you know, they're already thinking Marvin Harrison Jr. is 102 after Caleb Williams comes off the board in a super flex rookie draft. They're already targeting Marvin Harrison Jr. and they'd rather have him than Justin Jefferson just based on, you know, the situation for the way the situation looks right now for Justin Jefferson, ignoring the fact that Marvin Harrison Jr. doesn't have a situation yet. he doesn't have an NFL quarterback. Yeah, like he doesn't have Sam Darnold, granted, because he doesn't have an NFL quarterback. He doesn't have draft capital. Like he's still the proverbial mystery box. Justin mm-hmm. Jefferson is not.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I kind of think that might be a possibility, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to dig into rookies here in a little bit, but I want to ask you, John, we started off with Herbert for my call. Is there any free agent situation that has created an interesting opportunity for you to either buy, sell, or to sort of navigate the QBX strategy?
I think Justin Fields, we talked about him last week. He's in a little bit of a buy window all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty crazy.
Talk me through that situation real quick. Talk me through the Steelers.
Yeah, I know. Man. is Dr. Kalen Fang around? Like
you're on your own.
We really need a clinical psychologist for this one. But yeah, I mean, so Russell Wilson basically free, you know. Like he's on a 1-year deal playing for the league minimum because Denver is paying him $38 million to play for the Steelers. So Steelers don't have to pay him anything. He kind of gives you a veteran presence. We've seen that he can be, he's not the guy that he used to be who can kind of drag you an imperfect roster to a win or a playoff berth or a Super Bowl. He's not that guy anymore, but he's solid enough that he can go along for the ride with a good roster, which is what you have in Pittsburgh. He's going to have good protection. He's going to have decent weapons. He's going to have a reasonable running game, and he's got a good defense on the other side. So, you know, that's all stuff that he can win with. He can win more than he loses with that. But he also kind of gives you the opportunity to ease in with Justin Fields. The thing about it is, I just don't think there's any reason on earth for them to not start Justin Fields at some point this season. They're just not financially committed to Russell Wilson. I mean, maybe he plays to a level where you can't take him off the field, but we haven't seen that from him in several years, not just the 2 years in Denver, but you know, a year or two previously in Seattle, he was a game manager at best. And sometimes not even that. So, you know, I can't imagine that he performs to a level where they're just like, we can't justify taking him off the field. And so at that point, it's like, why wouldn't you take a look at what you've got with Justin Fields? You've got to make a decision on a long-term contract for that guy before too long. He's a more dynamic player, if we're being honest. He's not quite as polished as a passer. And they have a lot of similarities when it comes to some of the more negative traits, but You know, but he's younger, he's faster, he's you know, probably a little bit more dynamic at this point, and he's got the opportunity to be your future, be your franchise quarterback of the future. So, you know, why wouldn't you at some point take a look at him? So, you know, for me, I guarantee that at some point this season, Justin Fields takes over the starting role in Pittsburgh. There's just kind of no reason not to.
Quick follow-up question. What is wrong with Justin Fields?
Again, Dr. Fang. I mean, I think, and this is something that seems to happen to a lot of young quarterbacks when they get into the league, but so, you know, kind of the easy answer, kind of the cop-out answer is he holds the ball too long. There's more to it. And it's about his ability to process information. It's about his confidence. And you know, like this is the stuff that's that derailed guys like Drew Locke, Daniel Jones, Tim Tebow. I could just list off a bunch of Broncos quarterbacks, but you know, Mitchell Trubisky, like this happened with all of these guys. They just kind of, you know, and I don't know if it's that the offense is too complicated or has been too complicated, or he just literally, like both Paxton Lynch, like I said, I could just list off Broncos quarterbacks, both, all three, Tim Tebow, Paxton Lynch, Drew Locke, they all had the exact same problem, different coaches, different offensive coordinators saying the same thing about all three of them, which is you can't script any plays for them. You can't give them more than one play at a time. They can't run a 2-minute drill because you have to shuttle in a new play to them after every play, because they can't remember. If you tell them, all right, you're going to run this play, and then after that, you're going to run this play, they can't remember that second one. Like, they can't process that information. Maybe that's going on for Justin Fields too, but you know, at the very least, he's having a hard time reading defenses. He's having a hard time, you know, tracking defensive backs. He's having a hard time anticipating wide receiver routes, you know, throwing guys open, or at least throwing to where you imagine this guy is going to be. Like, he has to see them open. And if he doesn't, he holds the ball or he takes off and runs. But like, either way, like these are things that are just absolutely devastating to an NFL quarterback. So, you know, that's stuff that's going to have to change. But, you know, maybe you get some guys in there who are a little bit better at separating, or maybe he gets comfortable with the, you know, the downfield throws into some traffic and let George Pickens make some contested catches. Maybe that it appeals to him somehow. Like, you know, there's some ways for this to work, but yeah, like in terms of what's the issue, it really kind of boils down to kind of the intellectual side of playing the quarterback position.
I think that's going to drive Tomlin crazy, the Steelers quarterback. I think it's going to keep him off the field probably longer than it should. And I think it's going to put the ball in Najee Harris's hand far too often than it should. This is going to be the most boring 3 yards in a cloud of dust offense, most likely, because that's what Russ is good at, is managing the game at this point. The magic is gone. The legs, yes, there's still a little bit there, but the evading the sack and spinning out and doing a 40-yard bomb down the field, we can't bank on that anymore. That's all that Justin Fields is, and I don't think that's going to be enough for Mike Tomlin. And so my prediction is that Russell Wilson muddles through a year, maybe even two, with the Steelers of just a very boring offense. And then we just have to play that waiting game further with Justin Fields. I don't know. I'll buy Justin Fields for a second and a third, somewhere in that range. But I seem to be a little bit more bearish than you, John.
Yeah, I get it. The one thing that I would say I've seen, you know, that I've also kind of witnessed with Russell Wilson the last 2 years is it's not just the processing. Like he struggles with that a little bit too. He's a little bit more willing to throw a YOLO ball. Like there's no lack of confidence, which is to his benefit. That's something that he has that Justin Fields doesn't seem to have. But I think that he struggles a little bit with the processing information, but he doesn't know that he has a problem with that the way Justin Fields understands that he struggles with that part. So Russell Wilson is calling audibles, whether it's pre-snap, he's making adjustments that are wrong for the personnel, wrong for the matchups. And like, that's kind of worse, you know, like it's bad. It's bad when, your quarterback steps up to the line and then doesn't recognize that he needs to adjust his protections or that he needs to audible. He needs to hot route some of his wide receivers. Like it sucks when they don't recognize that. It's even worse when they recognize that something's wrong and then audible into something even worse. Yeah. And Russell Wilson does that a lot confidently. So it's good. Like Mike Tomlin, I think he might stress quit after this season. There's just no winning with that combination.
We got close last year. He just walked off the stage. You know, he was so over it last year with Mason Rudolph and Kenny Pickett. Just wait till 2024. Let's turn this though to QBX strategy again. How do you feel about QBX this offseason? Is it alive and well? Are there players that you want to be acquiring right now on the cheap at the quarterback position?
There are a few. It's kind of they're pretty short term. Which is, that's generally kind of okay for QBX. Your quarterback five could be like a Jarrett Stidham or Gardner Minshew. Like those guys look like they're headed for starting roles this season. So that can work. But it's a little bit tougher when we still have so much ambiguity at the position. Right now, like I tweeted this the other day, there are five teams that need starting quarterbacks and there's basically two, they're fighting over two rookies. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're looking at either the Patriots with Jacoby Brissett, the Raiders with Gardner Minshew, the Broncos with Jarrett Stidham, the Giants with Daniel Jones, or the Commanders with, wait, who do they have at the moment? They just got.
Oh, shoot. I'm going to look that up. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that's my fault. I totally just spaced on who it was they brought in. And Super Friends are yelling at us right now. yelling at their phone, yelling at their. They know who it is.
My mind was on Sam Howell. I was going to ask you, and let's get your opinion on the Sam Howell trade to Seattle while I look up the Commanders depth chart.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that could be another Trey Lance type situation, just kind of a stop along the way. I can't imagine that he supplants Geno Smith anytime soon. So, it's possible, but I just don't think he's worth rostering. I think the probability is just a little too low.
Dude, I looked up on commanders.com. Their official depth chart does not list a quarterback.
What?
Great.
That is not cool. I swear they brought in somebody, didn't they?
They did. This is terrible podcasting. So they got Marcus Mariota. Is that who you're talking about?
I don't think so. I thought they, like, who would their starter be right now? Mariota? Like, if they were, I mean, I'm sure they're going to stay put at two and draft Jane Daniels or Drake May. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that'll happen. But, like, seriously, they don't have anybody else. Like,
it doesn't seem like it. That is wild.
Okay. Well, that it makes me feel better about forgetting any names.
So, yeah, that poor dude. Marcus Mariota has seen some things, man.
Yeah. So
let's turn it to running back, though, because I know you had some thoughts about some of these backfields. Rico Dowdle, my boy, re-signed with the Cowboys.
Yeah.
And then you had some thoughts on the Chargers backfield as well.
Yeah, both of those. And in fact, I would say the Vegas Raiders too. We've kind of been talking about Zamir White. We've been talking about Isaiah Spiller. We've talked a little bit about Rico Dowdle. We haven't included him nearly enough. And then we've been talking a lot about Tyjae Spears. He's kind of the one who gets actually dinged a little bit with Tony Pollard coming in. But I still think that, you've got two very similar players there at the same position. I kind of think that they probably stick with the guy. First of all, Tony Pollard is not that good. Never has been. That's why he was available in this case. But Tyjae Spears is a much more dynamic player. I think that's probably going to show out. I think Tyjae Spears is fine. He does lose some volume here, but Zamir White probably loses a little bit of volume to Alexander Mattison. But again, they bring in a guy who, looks like a possible starter. He's got starting experience, but he's far inferior to the guy that you already had, Isaiah Spiller, right at the moment. I mean, they're probably going to draft somebody. They might even actually go through with drafting Blake Corum and reuniting him with Jim Harbaugh. That's fine. Like, that's kind of worst case scenario. I'll admit that for Isaiah Spiller, but I'm not convinced that Blake Corum is a better football player than Isaiah Spiller. I'm not sure that he's a better option. I don't know for sure if he's got more loyalty, but whatever loyalty discrepancy is there kind of gets erased when the two get out onto the field. And then Rico Dowdle is, again, they probably draft somebody. Maybe it's even somebody who could compete for some touches. But, I mean, a big part of why they didn't sign Tony Pollard to a long-term contract last year, they let him play through a walk year. And there was kind of no reason not to lean on him hard. Mm-hmm. At that point, you've got him under contract for games, not years. There's kind of no reason not to run him until the wheels fall off. Yet they still went with Rico Dowdle most of the time because he was the better player. Now they sign him to a longer term contract. Like, they're telling you who they like at running back. Like, this one in particular is kind of a case where I think we can stop worrying about who's on the horizon, who's coming for that job, and finally just say, man, they're telling us that this is their guy,
Most of these guys could be had for thirds, fourth round picks. Tyjae Spears, probably somewhere in the early to mid second round range.
Yeah.
If you amalgamized all of these running backs that you just talked about and said, that is my RB2, do you think you get enough starts to get you through a season?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, my only concern would be the fact that they're all probably first wave running backs. They're all guys who are going to be, they're going to be flex starters for you in week one through three or four. And then they start getting injured and their backups start coming in. And now we're on to, you know, Deuce Vaughn and Joshua Kelly. So, you know, it's kind of how does the timeline work out for them? But yeah, I mean, like if we were to just kind of, if we were to assume that these guys are all, like if they were going to stay healthy, which is not a bet we ever make at running back, but yeah. If they were to stay healthy, yeah, like you're getting a full season out of every one of those guys, I think. And throw in Jerome Ford, by the way. He also survived free agency.
Almost unbelievably so. I was really thrilled because I took your advice and I picked him up in season. He got me some really good starts. And I was a little nervous, John. I was nervous that I was going to lose the Jerome Ford experience that was promised to me. And thus far, yeah, Zamir White, Jerome Ford, Rico Dowdle, like those are all guys that are hanging on where they're, I think, hanging in there. Starts out of them.
Yep. And I still think you will from Tyjae Spears. I think you will from Isaiah Spiller. Like I said, I don't know that Isaiah Spiller is quite as much of a lock is what we were thinking, but because they will draft somebody, I would imagine. But you know, I still think that Isaiah Spiller is, at least at the moment, he's the best running back on that roster. And kind of at best, you upgrade with one guy, you know. Yeah. So like he's still gonna be a big part of their offense, especially if they don't have any wide receivers. Like if all they're gonna do is run, you need a lot more Isaiah Spillers. Mm-hmm. So
where do the rookies fit in for you, the rookie running backs specifically to this picture?
I think that overall people are still kind of undervaluing those guys. And I think that it's really gonna, for the most part, it's going to continue once these guys have landing spots. But I think that probably one or two guys goes to some of these spots that we're talking about. It's very possible that Dallas drafts somebody. They almost have to, you know, they really don't have, they just don't have a whole lot of depth. So, you know, in whoever Dallas drafts, especially if they take them in the second round, people are going to fall in love with that guy, move him into the first round of Superflex rookie drafts, which is fine. That's not a horrible call or anything. But I think they're going to miss out on some of the guys who didn't land in, you know, the kind of the prime landing spots, but still found some good landing spots. Like Carolina is going to be a good landing spot. They're kind of revamping that offensive line a little bit. There's still a need for a running game there. Miles Sanders is not the answer. I'm not so sure Chuba Hubbard is either. Like they could get it if they brought in a Braylon Allen or a Marshawn Lloyd. Like all of a sudden you've got a three down back and those little scat back pass catcher guys just don't even need those. Mm-hmm. You finally have your just kind of your bell cow guy. So, you know, like Carolina's a pretty good landing spot. I had some others in mind just a minute ago. I mean, I kind of think Minnesota could still be a good landing spot, even though Aaron Jones is there. I think right now Ty Chandler's kind of in line for a decent workload. And I think that I think that he could be upgraded as well.
You look at Cincinnati. That could be another really strong spot. Zach Cincinnati Moss could be there. I want to focus on Carolina, though. I think you brought up a really interesting offense. Bryce Young finally has a pass catcher. He's got Deontay Johnson, right?
Yeah.
They're kind of begging for a big bruising running back who can actually move the chains and they can construct an efficient offense, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like I said, I mean, getting him a little protection, I think, makes a big difference. Deontay Johnson, I don't know that he's a huge upgrade from what they had with Adam Thielen last year. It's a very similar type of role. But I mean, he's going to be a target hog. That's for sure. And man, maybe they actually target him in the end zone a little bit too. Like,
that's the dream. Yeah. I get your point on Thielen. It's just rewinding the clock by what, 7 or 8 years at this point. Cause that works. That works with Bryce Young. That's what he needs, is somebody who is a technician as a route runner. And I think they got exactly that, and they're probably not done adding, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they target another wide receiver or tight end fairly early, which I don't believe they have a first round pick.
No, they gave up the 101 in order to get their quarterback of the future. We've all been there, guys. I've said this before, like, if they had drafted CJ Stroud, if that outcome had happened, we'd all be lauding them as geniuses. It just didn't work out, guys. Like, we've all done that. I've done that before in Dynasty. Like, sometimes it just doesn't happen. You're pretty sure on a guy, you make the bet, and the bet doesn't work.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they'll, like, I do think they have second round picks, though, at least, right? Did they give those up too? Do they get to pick anybody? Because like the second round is still draft capital we're chasing for wide receivers, tight ends, and especially running backs. But, you know, like Zach Reed always says, you know, the second round is the new first round, essentially, for, you know, for positions like that. So, they could get a wide receiver, and especially in such a deep class. Man, like some of the guys who are likely to make it to the second round, you know, Brian Thomas and Adonai Mitchell and, you know, maybe I don't know that Xavier Worthy is what we're looking for here, but it could happen. Ladd McConkey, or, man, I would really hate that one, actually.
Would you really? Tell me why.
He's just kind of another one of those, you know, precision route runner types. Little bit of a slot receiver type of guy. And you already have that times two with Deontay Johnson and Adam Thielen. Like, it's time for a field stretcher.
Gotcha.
So we want someone who's going to get down the field, and whether it's, you know, separate at the end of their routes or win contested catches. That's the type of thing we're looking for them, I think. But there are plenty of ways for them to achieve that with this class. This class is just loaded with that type of guy. So, like I said, I would be looking at Brian Thomas and Adonai Mitchell as possibilities. I would feel okay about Xavier Worthy there. I think that he probably opens things up for the rest of the offense more than he helps himself, but that's still a, you know, a path for Bryce Young to start to return what we had to pay for him a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Let's dig into some of the ADP, the Superflex ADP, because we're getting mock drafts every month now at DLF. And they're pretty telling to me. I don't know if you have any strong opinions on this, John, but I certainly do.
I want to hear yours first. I do, you know, I do. But yeah, I want to hear your thoughts first.
Sure. First and foremost, I'm not a tape guy. I watch the NFL. I watch every single game in the NFL. Love doing it. I don't watch college football, so I don't have specific player name takes. However, I've got some wide receiver bias here. I think there are far too many going at the top of Superflex rookie drafts right now. I can't wrap my head around Marvin Harrison Jr. at the 102. So 101, Caleb Williams, great, whatever. 55-45 bet, a quote unquote generational prospect. We've heard that before, but like, we're playing Superflex Dynasty, folks. You draft the quarterback 101 if they've got that type of pedigree. 102, Marvin Harrison Jr. And then we get into two quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels and Drake May. I can't put myself to draft Marvin Harrison in the first four picks. Can you, John?
No, I don't think so. And, you know, we talked about this off air. Like, I really want to try and be fair about this. I really want to try and represent the other side of it. But, you know, again, like, this class is so deep.
Exactly. Like,
you know, it's less about Harrison and it's more about the fact that those guys that I mentioned, Brian Thomas, Adonai Mitchell, you know, Troy Franklin, Xavier Worthy, like those guys, Roma Dunze, I think is just as bust proof as Marvin Harrison. And you could move back from, you know, if you're at 102, you're set at quarterback, you've gone QBX, you're good at quarterback. And it, like, this is the type of strategy stuff I've been wanting to talk about with you.
We're in it now.
Yeah. And you know, a friend of ours has been talking about this quite a bit with me. He's got this loaded ass roster, man. Basically QBX, possibly he also has Trey Lance, so possibly beyond QBX. And it's like somewhere in between my QBX builds and your arms race builds. Where it's like he's got four really, really good weekly options.
Nice.
And then, you know, two guys who are not likely to make it into his lineup, but he's got the depth. Plus, he has 102. There's kind of no reason for him to take a chance on Jaden Daniels, right? Like, at that point, like, what are the odds that the odds are far greater that Jalen Daniels busts than Jalen Daniels makes it into his lineup, considering the other guys he has. And I don't remember the exact names right at the moment, but it's strong. It's really strong. So there's kind of no reason for him to make that pick. And yet I still would not take Marvin Harrison right there, because you can move back from 102 to, you know, 106. Roma Dunze's there. Plus you got some extra picks for some of these running backs who are going to end up getting pushed to the end of the first and second round.
Here's my problem with it, is we are horrible at predicting which wide receiver is going to be good. We can say first round draft capital, great. That's about a 50-50 bet on whether or not they return a top 24 season in any of the first 3 years of their career. If we're getting the projected draft capital of five wide receivers drafted in the first round or more, which would be a record, we're just increasing the rolls of dice. We're not necessarily saying like all of these receivers are so good that they're generational talents. We're saying that they're all worthy of a first round selection. They're worthy of a coin flip. Mm-hmm. I don't want to play in the coin flip waters at 102 if I can do the same exact thing at 109 or 202.
Right.
If I had the 102 and that stacked roster, assuming that Dak Prescott is not on my team already, I'd rather trade the 102 for Dak Prescott and the 202 and then make essentially the same bet. It's not that I think that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be bad. I think he's going to be very good, like as much as we all do, but it almost doesn't matter. I mean, the dynasty landscape is littered with Corey Davis's and Corey Coleman's and all sorts of receivers that we were certain were going to be incredible. And guess what? They busted. They were drafted really high and they didn't work out. And you look back and it's like, what was I thinking? I could have gotten X, Y, or Z player. This is an opportunity to do that and to have essentially the same bet later in the draft. It almost never happens that way. We're almost never in a position where the running backs are so depressed in terms of anticipated value, anticipated draft capital. Wide receivers are looked at as so good, and there's enough quarterbacks to buoy that to where it's like, hey, I should draft one of these four quarterbacks, maybe even five quarterbacks, because the rest of the wide receiver bets look essentially identical.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, man, even if, all right, so Here's what I will say about wide receivers that I'm starting to feel like maybe we're getting close to that saturation point with wide receivers that we hit with running backs several years ago, where it was just like, right? There's kind of not enough jobs. And now, and it, you know, like, I kind of think that the NFL might be signaling this to us a little bit. We're seeing a lot of 1-year contracts for wide receivers. Mike Williams just signed another one today with the Jets. But, you know, you can really just kind of cycle through wide receivers because there's just this endless supply. There's more wide receivers, especially once this class hits. Like, there are more wide receivers than jobs. And, you know, we're kind of getting to that saturation point where it's going to make it even harder to justify spending much of anything, you know, putting any much of any value towards wide receivers when there are too many to go around, you know, like there are just so many different ways that you can address that position that, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. doesn't really even like, even if I had a crystal ball, I mean, first of all, I'd like to think I would have more Twitter followers, than I do, but like, but I probably wouldn't. It's not as fun to just say, oh, here's what's absolutely for sure, 100% going to happen as I peer into the future. That's not as grabby as some of the clickbait out there. I'll admit that. So, but if I had that, and I could tell you for a fact, Marvin Harrison Jr. hits, Jaden Daniels busts. It's still process-wise, just because of the way the two positions are built, especially right now, right at this moment. Process-wise, it still would be the right move to take Jaden Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
As crazy as that is to say, knowing that Jaden Daniels was a bust, it's still. I mean, maybe you pivot to Drake May instead, or ask me if Drake May busts as well. But like, you know, if all I gave you was, yeah, Jaden Daniels busts, Marvin Harrison Jr. hits, it was still the right move to take the quarterback there.
Let's roll the clock back 10 months. We had Bryce Young and JSN going pretty close to each other in Superflex rookie drafts. Who would you rather have right now?
Yeah, I believe I still have Bryce Young ranked ahead of JSN.
I'd rather have Bryce Young. Both had a pretty terrible season, if we're being honest. Like, ADOT was horrible for JSN. He has the same competition in front of him that he had before. We had a processing issue with Bryce Young, similar to Justin Fields, right?
Yeah.
Not seeing the field very well, not reacting quickly, not dumping it off fast enough, taking too many sacks. We don't have the buoyed rushing upside. But I'd still rather have the quarterback, even with just like one of the worst quarterback seasons we've had in a while. Like, give me that profile still. And so if I'm looking at a very flat potential tier of wide receivers and 4 or 5 quarterbacks, between you and me, John, like, I'd rather have the 101 through the 104 all be quarterbacks at this point, because we don't have draft capital. We're making assumptions, but those assumptions should lean toward the quarterback.
Yeah, it really should. Like, that should, at the very least, that should really be the default, right? Mm-hmm. Even at 104, like, you should be planning on 104 being a quarterback. I don't think that you necessarily have to make that move when the time comes, but I think you should, like, that's how you should be valuing 104.
Exactly.
The only drawback to doing that is right at the moment, markets are telling us that we should be valuing Marvin Harrison Jr. above those quarterbacks. Now, it's tough because it's flawed, right? It's like this irrationality within the market. But I mean, it's something that we still have to kind of, we don't have to, but we have the opportunity to explode that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's
jump down to the 105 or the 106 then. Are you valuing that very similar to the 104 because of your perception of quarterback versus wide receiver?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am. The other thing that happens at 106, I think, is, first of all, I do think that there's going to be some quarterback help available to you. Second, I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is most likely off the board. the rest of those guys are there. Malik Nabers is there. Roma Dunze is there. Like, those are, and again, you know, are they going to be better than Marvin Harrison Jr.? Maybe, most likely not. I don't think we could plan on it, but can they be just as good? Absolutely. One of them will, in fact. Like, mm-hmm. The odds say that one of those guys is going to be just as good, if not better. And so, you know, you've got the opportunity to get a very similar player to Marvin Harrison Jr. at 106. And then Brock Bowers comes into play as well. So, mm-hmm. Like, there's actually a lot more versatility and a lot more ability to kind of just address a position of need at 106 than there is in the top four or five.
What does different look like to you at the wide receiver position? You said that someone is probably going to jump above Marvin Harrison Jr. And I agree with that. Like, Justin Jefferson was not the first wide receiver drafted in his class in the NFL or in dynasty football leagues. So like, let's just say points per game finishes. Where do you think Marvin Harrison Jr. is likely to finish, most likely to finish in his rookie year versus some of these other highly touted rookies?
Well, I wouldn't plan on any of them giving you a particularly good season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think like top 12, top 15 is kind of the ceiling for a rookie wide receiver, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And that's just off the top of my head. Like, you actually probably have done more work on something like this than I have. Like, you probably have a little bit more of a less of a vibes type of opinion and more of a like hard data.
Well, it's a good class. I wanted to give you a bit more rope. If he was wide receiver 13 in points per game, let's just pull that up real quick. Just for context, right? If that's your expectation of this great receiver, that's around 16 points per game. Like, that does matter. However, if you get down to wide receiver 20, that's about 15 points per game. It's really not that different, right? Like, we're in such a flat tier where you have to ask yourself the question, can he elevate, can Marvin Harrison Jr. or any of these rookie wide receivers elevate truly into like the top six or seven wide receivers? That's the only point in which the points per game difference really starts to matter. And so what you're betting on is extreme upside. I've seen the 101, 102, 103 going for Amon-Ra St. Brown types, for CeeDee Lamb types. I think that that's probably what I want to do with these high picks if I'm aiming at wide receiver, just to give me a safer floor and much higher ceiling. Like, I just don't get it. And I still need to be convinced on why the 102 belongs to wide receiver. I get 109, mm-hmm. 107, like in those middle parts of the first round, that makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. But the very heights of rookie drafts, I'm still stuck on that.
Yeah, no, I'm fully with you on that. And in fact, you know, like if part of the goal is for us to, you know, spend some later picks and kind of take some shots at some guys who could be Tank Dell, Puka Nacua, you know, I mean, it's not great process to chase that, admittedly, but mm-hmm. It's a hell of a lot cheaper to chase and to try and do that than to try and thread that needle than to, you know, just invest heavily in somebody who's, you know, a little bit more, you know, well, not a little, quite a bit safer, but it's still like the price differential just doesn't really catch up, you mm-hmm. know? So, you know, yeah, like I mean, trade back and take some shots. And like I said, I mean, in the DLF ADP, it looks like Adonai Mitchell is wide receiver 8 going at 201, basically in a 12 team league, going 12th overall or 13th overall. I mean, but you know, I like in reality, I think he's going to go quite a bit later. Roman Wilson going at 212, Ricky Pearsall going at 303. you know, Jalen Polk, like, and the, these are all guys who could be NFL first rounders, by the way, you know, so Tez Walker going in the third round, like those are all guys to take shots on. And, you know, like for a lot cheaper, you get some, you know, some lotto tickets. They're lotto tickets. They're low probability, but you get all three of those guys. Chances are one of them hits to some extent and makes up at least part of what you gave up by not taking Marvin Harrison Jr.
Mm-hmm. Do Bo Nix or Michael Penix go in the second round, in your opinion, of the NFL draft?
Probably, and at least Bo Nix will. He might even make it into the first round. Mm-hmm. He might be that guy that somebody trades back into 32 and takes. So I think it would be a mistake, but if he goes in the first round, I'm interested. Mm-hmm. Ish. You know, like I think he's a rookie first rounder at that point. Mm-hmm. If they don't make it into the first round, I don't think Michael Penix will. I honestly, he's pretty much dead to me. Like if he goes in the second round, I'm really just kind of not interested. There's always a point where it makes sense, like the value catches up and we got to take him. But man, he would have to, I think he would probably have to fall to the third or fourth round for me to really be interested if he's got second round NFL draft capital.
So do second round rookies not count in your QBX strategy as quarterbacks?
Yeah, no, not really. You know, I get that wrong sometimes. I missed out on Will Levis. I don't know how big of a miss that is at this point, but it's obviously somewhat of a miss. But process wise, the NFL is kind of telling you what they think of Will Levis by allowing him to fall to the second round.
Yeah.
You know, especially when we know the value of a first round quarterback, because then you get 5 years on that rookie deal instead of four. If this works, mm-hmm. if this hits, you get 5 years before you have to pay him anything. And you get to build this monster team around him with the money that you're saving at quarterback.
Totally. So
like that's just kind of a cheat code for building an NFL roster. And if that's not compelling enough to them to move up and take Will Levis in the first round and get that extra year with him, then I just don't think they're that excited about him, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it would be the same thing with Michael Penix. Michael Penix has kind of a lot of flaws. So,
yeah, I mean, they do once you get to the second round.
Yeah.
Let's say you're in like a 28-man roster league, 12-team league. You're a contender. How many non-first-round picks do you want to have on your team if you're a contending team?
Oh, man. Man, that's a really good question. I kind of think it depends on which first round picks are we talking about. Like, I'll take some
first rounders, second, third, fourth rounders.
Yeah. No first rounders. Okay.
Yeah. I want to talk about sort of the middle to back end of your roster and how the rookie draft sort of fits into that.
Yeah, man. I'll take as many as I can get.
Yeah.
On a contender. I mean, you know, like make sure that you've got the roster space for it. Like if you've got a taxi squad, load that thing up with second and thirds.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where the running backs are going to be. That's where the lotto ticket wide receivers are going to be. That's where you're going to get JT Sanders at tight end, who I think, you know, I think Jatavion Sanders has a chance to be the best tight end in this class. And that's going to be blasphemy because Brock Bowers, mm-hmm. I get it. Like the profile seems just untouchable, just knowing what we know about how the tight end position works and how this actually seems it tends to pan out, it's not the guy that you most expect from a class. It's who's more athletic, who can block in, enough to get on the field and stay on the field, and then who can be a dynamic part of their offense, like Sam Laporta, you know, like George Kittle.
The beauty is, like, the acquisition cost of a Brock Bowers is probably what, like 106, somewhere probably in that range. Yeah. Mid-first rounder. If you're talking about Sanders, it's the end of the second, beginning of the third round. If you're in a tight end premium with a heavy premium, it's like, okay, I'll spend the 204 on him. That's nothing compared to the 106.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like at that point, again, I mean, we're just kind of taking lotto tickets, trying to find Tank Dell, trying to find Puka Nacua, trying to find Rashee Rice. Well, while we're at it, let's try to find Sam Laporta, you know? So, like that's the type of shots that you want to be taking if you're just kind of, you know, if you're just kind of looking for some more upside. If you're just looking for some ceiling, you don't need to fill holes. You're just kind of trying to add some extra value, essentially.
Let's say you spent all your picks in season last year. You made a deep playoff run, whether or not you won the championship, whatever. You don't have rookie draft picks this year. Are you trying to get back in the rookie draft? If so, where are you trying to get in?
Yeah, I would get in anywhere in the second round.
Yeah.
I'm not too worried about getting into the first round. In fact, I don't think it's worth it to get into the first round.
I agree.
Like if you're desperate at quarterback, okay, but I still think there are cheaper ways to fix quarterback even than getting into the early part of the first round. Seconds, kind of thirds. And it's weird because, I mean, that's just kind of how this draft class is lining up, because typically third round picks just don't interest me at all. Mm-hmm. But this is a deep enough class, and we don't really even, at least according to ADP, we don't break the seal on the running backs until the second round. And there are so many of them. Plus there's still a ton of wide receivers that people are going to be into that'll push the running backs down even further. So It's like all of a sudden, you know, you're getting first round talent in the third round of rookie drafts just because they're running backs.
I think this is the year where if you're holding the 201 or the 202 and you're on the clock, this is the year where you can trade it for a 25 first round pick, a random 25 first. And so that's kind of where I want to be, not so much to select the players, but to have that leverage opportunity over my league mates, because I think there's going to be some really interesting trades happening right at the turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. And yeah, there's going to be some sell opportunities too. You know, I think people are going to like these wide receivers, it's super deep. And people just kind of have their favorites. I'm guilty of it too. I keep mentioning Adonai Mitchell. He's my guy. And you know, if I cared more about wide receivers, if I saw Adonai Mitchell, especially if he gets first round draft capital, like they think that he might, or early second, goes to a good enough situation. Like if he ended up with the LA Chargers with their second round pick and he's still on the board at 111, if I was a wide receiver guy, I would be falling all over myself to get back into the first round for him. The reality is they're still going to be guys in the second round who are just as good. But that's the thing. I mean, you're going to run into a lot of those situations where people's kind of favorite wide receiver just keeps falling and they're going to be trying to move up. Somebody's always going to be looking to move up because this wide receiver that they're specifically targeting is still there because there's just so freaking many of them.
Yeah. Assuming you know, first and second round draft capital for a lot of these guys. How much does landing spot factor in for you?
For wide receivers, it doesn't matter a ton to me for the most part. With some obvious exceptions, like Arizona and the Chargers really need some wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Carolina could use some perimeter wide receivers. So, you know, there's some spots where it's it's somewhat compelling. But for the most part, I don't know if I can totally attribute this to Peter Howard, because I don't know if this is exactly what he would say. But it does kind of take kind of the gist of what he talks about with targets being earned, and kind of applies it to rookie wide receivers, which is a good wide receiver is going to earn targets no matter where he's at. You know, and in fact, like, they're going to move some guys out of the way if they end up with someone that they really like. You know, if they have somebody who's going to command some targets, they'll be happy to dump some salaries to mm-hmm. get some veterans out of the way for this rookie who came in as the, you know, George Pickens came in as what, the third wide receiver behind Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool, third at best, in fact. And now they've kind of moved everyone out of the way so that he's a wide receiver one. Like mm-hmm. They can earn those targets kind of regardless of the situation. So with wide receivers, I try not to get too caught up in the landing spot. There are some in particular that I think are worth kind of picking on, but for the most part, yeah, like if it's a good enough player, if we're right about our priors on that player, then it doesn't matter where he landed. The one exception being New England.
Let's say Marvin Harrison lands.
And I gotta be honest with you, Tommy, Jacksonville is getting dangerously close to that territory.
I know, man. You don't have to rub it in.
They still at least have a quarterback, but man, like they are just, they approach NFL wide receivers the way we approach fantasy wide receivers. It's just like, just whoever.
It's brutal, man. I'm going to circle this back to New England though, because I want to put your feet to the fire a little bit.
Yeah.
Marvin Harrison Jr. gets drafted to the Patriots.
Oh God.
I know, like nightmare scenario. We've all had visions of the Cardinals or XYZ landing spot. It's the worst case outcome. Mm-hmm. And he drops and he drops and he drops in your rookie draft. At what point are you drafting Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Like I said, I still think that you have to consider the possibility that he's landing spot proof.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to a certain extent. Now, like, I think, like, I mean, there's a real possibility that the New York Giants end up with Malik Nabers, who I think is just as good as Marvin Harrison Jr. I won't go quite as far as most people as to rank him ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. I might have to double back and check my rankings and make sure I didn't do that. But like, he's right there. It's like a 1A, 1B thing. It's not a 1-2 thing. But Nabers going to the New York Giants, that definitely breaks the tie between the two. Mm-hmm. That's a bad landing spot for a wide receiver too. I'm still taking Malik Nabers over basically everybody else. And so Marvin Harrison Jr., I would kind of say the same thing. It's like, if he goes to the Patriots, Malik Nabers goes to a decent situation like the Chargers, a good situation like the Chargers, then all that really does for me is push Nabers ahead of Marvin Harrison. I hate to say it, because I just think that's such a bad situation for offensive skill position players in New England, but like, I think you still have to bet a little bit on the talent, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's the only way he ends up on my teams, Marvin Harrison Jr., is if he goes to a bad situation. And I'm not going to say I'm rooting for it, but if that happens, I'm going to have so much exposure because situations change, right? And
yeah, the problem is,
we just don't know. We thought that Justin Herbert going to the Chargers his rookie year was a bad situation. And so we faded Keenan Allen, the veteran, at that point, because it's like he can't succeed with this rookie quarterback who we have all these doubts about. And it's like, okay, if there is a perception of a poor situation, but we believe to this degree of talent, like, please let him fall three or four spots so that I can trade into that tier.
Yeah. The problem is, I think that we consider landing spots in situations more than most people do.
Fair.
I remember N'Keal Harry going to the Patriots and I was just out. I was like, that's such a bad landing spot for him. First of all, like they don't use wide receivers. And to be fair, that was a different regime. That was Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick. I think you've got an extension of that with Jerod Mayo. I think it's just kind of a watered down version of Bill Belichick in the Patriot way. Yeah. But to be fair, I don't know that for a fact, but I just remember N'Keal Harry. It was just such a bad situation for any player to go to. And then especially the way he plays, in particular, and the way he wins his matchups, and just really kind of the position that made the most sense to for him was the slot where that was already taken up by Julian Edelman, and they already had, you know, they were like three deep at tight end, and it's just like there's no room on the field for this guy. Mm-hmm. This makes absolutely no sense. It didn't bother anybody else at all. Like, it didn't stop them from taking him first overall. Like, so, unfortunately, like, we would be a little bit spooked by that. Mm-hmm. I think that people who, like, and this kind of goes back to some of the psychology stuff we talked about last week. I think that people are going to stick to their guns on it, even if it is a bad situation like that, bad landing spot like that, kind of worst case scenario for him, just because they've been saying all year basically that this is the best wide receiver prospect we've seen since Calvin Johnson, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's like you can't back off that just because he's a New England Patriot. Like, you've been saying that way too confidently to just give that up now. It's not true. You can back off of that and you should, but
you totally should. Yeah. Let's say that a dream scenario happens. The Chiefs trade up for Neighbors or Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, one of them is falling. They trade up to, you know, 9, 10, 11, whatever, in the NFL draft. And they take this highly touted prospect with their first round pick with a move up. Mm-hmm. Would that entice you to move either of those wide receivers above any of the quarterbacks?
Probably not necessarily. The Chiefs are kind of a low-key bad situation.
They kind of are.
especially now. So it depends on the guy. Like, yeah. Ladd McConkey, like, you've got to bump him up because they don't have a real slot guy that they can really count on. But, you know, if you're talking about some of the perimeter guys, it's like, I mean, you've got kind of the gadget type of shorter range outside guy with Rashi Rice. Now you've got the burner with Hollywood Brown. He's a better deep route, like a deep ball wide receiver than anybody in this class. So with the possible exception of Neighbors and Roma Dunze, but like it's going to be really hard for anybody to really carve out a role in that offense as it's currently constructed. So I think to me, the Chargers would be the one where like whoever they were to take in the first round, like strap that guy to a rocket ship to the moon, you know?
I got to be honest. I have doubts about that, not really? Just in passing volume, but just supporting cast. I would like one other competent pass catcher on the roster. And so if they draft a rookie and herald this individual as the one, that's not going to work in my book. I think they need to bring in a veteran for it to really click correctly. And you factor in the fact that, I mean, how many times are they going to throw? 25 times a game, 30 times a game? Like the passing volume is in question. We could see a real issue with touchdowns, which is what moves the needle. We want to have targets and touchdowns. That's pretty much it at the wide receiver position. I could see a lack of touchdowns in that offense for a rookie wide receiver. And if wide receivers don't perform in the first year, their value plummets. I mean, we've seen it multiple times where a receiver, you know, they're okay, but they don't have, you know, enough touchdowns to be a top 24 wide receiver. Kick them to the curb. They're done. You know, I've seen JSN go for a couple of seconds. He's in a very similar situation right now. Like, we've got believers, but a lot of folks are out on him now. You can't get the same common market value that you could 6 months ago.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, honestly, like it's also pretty unlikely that the Chargers go wide receiver in the first round, which would make it a moot point. And then, you know, like as much as I don't think landing spot matters too much, draft capital can matter.
Totally.
And so, you know, if they take one in the second round, I still believe in that guy. But if they don't take one in the first two rounds, then all of a sudden, like whoever they draft, it could be Marvin Harrison Jr. falls all the way to the third round. The Chargers take him. And I'm still just going to be like, okay, but you weren't willing to take him in the first two rounds. You weren't willing to take anybody else in the first two rounds. You know, I just, that's how draft capital kind of comes into play. So, and I mean, they just used a first round pick on a wide receiver last year. I don't think they do it again this year, especially now that they've got a head coach who, again, just wants, if he had his way, we would revert all the way back to the 1920s where it's nothing but running the football.
We'll see on that. I am hoping to be proven wrong, but I too have my doubts. However, like I started this conversation, Justin Herbert's never been easier to get. Now's the time to get him. But I want to leave room for you, John. Do you have any other thoughts around rookies or free agents at this time? There's so much more to talk about as we move into the non-point scoring season. But I want to leave room for you. What's on your mind? Anything else?
Man, I think we left enough on the table that we can even get another episode out of it at some point. So, and it might not be immediate. We still need to talk about orphans. And to be honest, like that's the type of thing that we really kind of want to talk about. We just knew that free agency is a pretty hot topic on people's minds. Now we turn our attention to the rookie draft. And like I said, at the top, we kind of wanted to talk about, kind of the codependency between those two things. And so, you know, felt like that's a very pertinent topic, but we've got plenty left to talk about on both counts. And we also have this stuff that you and I really want to talk about on a self-indulgent level.
Yeah, we'll get to all of it, but let's wrap this one up for this week. What do you say?
Let's do it. Let's wrap it up. And as we do that, ask you for a quick favor. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also subscribe to the DLF family of podcasts, Mega Feed, wherever you listen to podcasts as well. Get access to all the great podcasts from DynastyLeagueFootball.com. Once you've subscribed to the Superflex Super Show, if you do us a huge favor and rate and review the show, helps us to reach out to more people, expand our reach. Then we can involve more people in the conversation, really zero in on the topics that are the most useful to you, our super friends. You can get at us on X. I keep meaning to just call it Twitter. It's still just Twitter. You can get at us on Twitter. I'm at SuperflexDude. He's at FFTommyB. And we're always happy to retweet trade polls, answer questions in DMs or in mentions, whatever you got for us. We're always happy to continue this Superflex conversation with our super friends on the super corner of the world of the internet, formerly known as Twitter. This episode was dedicated in loving memory to James the Brain Katulis. Thank you to DynastyLeagueFootball.com for the platform. Thank you to Heart and Soul Radio for the music. And above all else, thank you for listening. And until next week, stay sexy and super flexy.